Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
The governor hasn't given any indication one way or the other. My wife did have a conversation with Governor Brown 3 days before she died, and I haven't given details on that conversation, but it was a good conversation, a productive conversation. So I hope that the governor hears that a terminally ill individual should have this option available to them. It'll go a long way to help current terminally ill Californians that are facing what Brittany was, a potentially brutal dying process.
That's California Right to Die advocate Dan Diaz talking about a bill passed by the California legislature currently sitting on Governor Jerry Brown's desk awaiting either his signature or his veto. In the meantime, the British Parliament rejected rather resoundingly a similar right to die law. What's the difference between California that kind of fast tracks a right to die law as it did and the British Parliament that decides to turn it down after some serious debate? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon, the 15th of September. Wesley Smith is going to join us here for the next few minutes. We're going to talk about those two assisted suicide bills. He's a columnist for National Review Online. Then Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us. We're going to continue our series responding to evangelical cliches. Jesus is a gentleman. You've heard this one, that Jesus isn't going to force himself on anybody. He's always going to ask his permission, maybe even pretty pleased with sugar on top, and he's going to stand at the door of your heart, and he will wait as long as it takes with that boombox on his shoulder until your heart turns toward him, and you open the door and let him in. Haven't you heard that before? Is it supported by Scripture? Well, we will find out when we talk with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller here in about 20 minutes on Issues Etc. Wesley Smith is a regular guest. He's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, a columnist for National Review Online. He's authored several books, including Forced Exit, Euthanasia Assisted Suicide, and The New Duty to Die. Wesley, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Out in California, you had a busy weekend there. At the open of the weekend, the California legislature approved rather stunningly a right-to-die bill, and one of its advocates, Mark Leno, a Democrat from San Francisco.
Very liberal, very radical fellow, by the way.
He had to say this about the bill. He says it allows for individual liberty and freedom of choice. What's your response?
Well, it's not freedom of choice. It's the end of all choices. You know, when you support another self-destruction, I don't think it's compassionate or morally neutral. It actually sends an insidious message that your life is no longer worth living, that you are becoming a burden, that you are better off dead, and by the way, that your death is best for us too. Assisted suicide isn't suicide. Assisted suicide is a joint enterprise to make someone dead. And once you go down that road, once you say that killing is an acceptable answer to the problem of human suffering, there really is no end. In fact, I'm about to write about the case in Belgium where a woman's son died, horrible, obviously, grief involved in that, and the answer to that grief was euthanasia. In Belgium, we have seen married couples euthanized, elderly married couples, because they fear widowhood, even when they're healthy. And in fact, in one case, the doctor who killed the parents was procured by the son, who said this was the only answer because caring for them would have been impossible. So in the end, while euthanasia and assisted suicide are sold as a matter of, quote, choice, in the end it's about abandonment.
So how long has this been coming in California? You've obviously been watching it at closer quarters than we have.
Oh, there have been continual efforts to legalize assisted suicide and even euthanasia since 1992. And every single one of them in the past has failed. And this one failed too, by the way, in the normal order of things. It had passed the state Senate, And the California legislature has become very radical. This is essentially a one-party state now, and that party is moving further and further to the left with each election, the Democrat Party. But when it got to the Assembly, in the Health Committee, Democrats, not only Republicans, but Democrats voted it down, refused to advance it. And there were a lot of liberals advocating against assisted suicide, the disability rights community, members of the civil rights community who saw their constituencies as having difficulty getting proper care. So they're more interested in assuring proper access to good medical treatment than getting a doctor to help you kill yourself. And so basically the bill died, at least for this year. And then Governor Brown called a special session, which was not to deal with this issue, but with Medicaid financing. And the pro-assisted suicide forces hijacked that special session. They introduced the bill. The Speaker of the Assembly stacked the committee, took out all those no votes, and stacked it with votes he knew would vote yes. And the thing was shoved through in a matter of 5 to 8 days. And so it now sits on Jerry Brown's desk, Governor Brown, for a signature or a veto. And if Jerry Brown signs this bill, and he might not, he said he didn't think this was the proper vehicle this session for passing such an important bill. But if he signs it, more than 10% of the people in the United States will have legal assisted suicide. And then that will be used as the energy and fuel to try to force legalization throughout the country. There were 27 states, I believe, that had attempts to legalize assisted suicide this year alone. All of them defeated, because the more you learn about assisted suicide, the less you support it. But people need to focus on what it's actually about rather than this kind of general, oh, well, if I was in a situation where nothing can be done to alleviate suffering, which is a false premise, then perhaps I would want, etc. That's why, in fact, in the UK, as you mentioned earlier, they refused to, in the House of Commons, they refused, and it was a free vote, a conscience vote, they refused to legalize assisted suicide by about a 3-to-1 margin because there was the time to have that argument. In this state, California, the proponents knew that the more argument, the more debate, the more people knew about assisted suicide, the less they support it. So they shoved it through on the fast track.
Let's talk a little bit about Governor Brown, because you mentioned there that he might not sign this because he doesn't want to appear to have this special session been hijacked by concerns that he may even agree with otherwise. What's your sense of if it were, let's say, if it were sent through the regular process and there was debate permitted? But of course, you've already pointed out there's a huge majority there that might favor this. What is your sense the governor would do in that case?
You know, it's very hard to tell. Jerry Brown is very enigmatic. He has vetoed some bills that were very radical. For example, he vetoed a bill that would have permitted biotech companies to purchase eggs from women for use in cloning research and biotechnological research. He vetoed that because the women could be exploited. At the same time, he signed a different bill that basically said that all bathrooms and sports teams have to be open to transgendered people based on their self-identification, not their biological sex. It's very hard to know what Jerry Brown will do. Jerry Brown has, by the way, spent about a year, as I understand it, with Mother Teresa back after he was the first time he was governor. So it is quite possible that a little of her righteousness, you know, rubbed off on him. I'm hoping so. So that he would veto the bill, but I don't know. It's very hard to tell. Jerry is, by the way, probably the most conservative, which tells you a lot, politician in California, at least at the state office level. He tends to be pretty extreme. So I don't know what he'll do.
The New York Times story that I was looking at here does have several quotes from Dr. Carity, who is concerned that the California bill is also a healthcare issue and that it's an issue of the haves arguing for assisted suicide at the expense of the have-nots. Do you share that concern?
That's absolutely true, because the people who tend to support assisted suicide are the very well-off and tend to be white people, such as those in Marin County and so forth. The people who are opposing this bill, in addition to social conservatives, are liberal politicians who represent poor communities. There's no question about it. LULAC, which is the biggest Latino civil rights organization in the country, opposes assisted suicide and euthanasia because they know that their constituency will have difficulty accessing adequate care. Some people may not even speak English when they go to hospitals and so forth. So there is really a divide. Assisted suicide is an issue of privilege. It is an issue of people who want what they want for themselves, and if other people get hurt, that's just tough because, well, choice.
Wesley Smith is our guest. He's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, a columnist for National Review Online. We're talking about these two bills, assisted suicide bills, one passed by the California legislature and another we'll get to here in a few minutes, rejected by the British Parliament. When we come back, really, we're talking about simple economics and the kind of pressure it can put on the un- or underinsured. We'll be right back. Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Wesley Smith of National Review Online about two assisted suicide bills, one passed by the California legislature and the other rejected resoundingly by the British Parliament. He'll be with us for another few minutes here. Folks, LCMS Life Ministry is devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and in the culture at large. There is a battlefront here before us as both individual Christians and as the church that has many different facets to it. We're talking about one of them, assisted suicide, where the doctor helps kill perhaps even the disabled or those whose lives are considered not worth living. There are many others as well, and LCMS Life Ministry is on the front line of each and every one of those battlefronts. You can check out their resources at lcms.org/life. Very easy to remember, lcms.org/life. Wesley, we were talking before about kind of the haves pushing these things on the have-nots. So we get a picture here of the un- or the underinsured, who for them it becomes a matter of kind of, well, mortal economics, really, in a way. It's just so much cheaper to have terminally ill loved one take a couple pills than it is to pursue the path of lengthy and financially devastating cancer treatment. Is that the picture that it's emerging here?
Yeah, well, you can see what happens in Oregon. Oregon rations, it's the only state, but it rations Medicaid, which is the insurance for the poor. Some people on Medicaid in Oregon, if they have terminal cancer, are denied life-extending. I'm not talking about curative, but life-extending chemotherapy is just one example. And, of course, that's a standard procedure. Somebody is terminal. There's probably not going to be a cure. But if you give some chemotherapy, the last shot of it, sometimes life can be extended at decent quality for 9 months or a year. That happened to my father. My father was dying of rectal cancer. He took that last shot of chemo to see if he could extend his life, and he actually had about 1 year of pretty healthy, in terms of able to get around and do things, a life. That was an important year for him and for us as his family and his loved ones. But that can be denied in Oregon under Medicaid. But Oregon refuses to ration assisted suicide in any regard. In fact, took it off the rationing list, making a statement in the state regulations that everyone should have access to assisted suicide. And indeed, in 2008, two cancer patients, Barbara Wagner and Randy Stroop, were denied life-extending chemotherapy by Medicaid, and they received a letter saying, we will not pay for your life in that way, but don't worry, we will pay for your assisted suicide. They completely freaked out, as you can imagine, and they were saying, my goodness, the state will pay for me to die, but not for me to live. That is exactly the direction this could go in, particularly as medical resources get tighter, and that which is deemed to be coverable as medicine. I mean, you have a great expansion. We hear about end of life as a cause of the expenditures of health resources, but we are also expanding what constitutes medical treatment in our country. Medicare, for example, now pays for sex change surgeries. And yet, we're told we shouldn't allow elderly people who are near the end of life to necessarily get all of the treatment that might be warranted.
You said a few minutes ago that the more the issue of physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia is debated in legislatures, or the more that it is discussed in the public square, the less people support it. So what do we learn about it in those debates and discussions that causes people who think they might, maybe it's a good idea, to change their minds?
Well, when you take a look at the premises, you find that there's really no way to set limits, which most people would want, on the practice. You also see, as we've already discussed, how this could lead to the cheaper method of caring for people with serious illnesses. You begin to discuss, well, what has happened in societies where the population has generally accepted the premise of killing as an answer to human suffering? We talked about that a little bit earlier, what's happened in Belgium, and we can talk about in the Netherlands. Psychiatrists are killing the mentally ill as euthanasia. There was one psychiatric journal in the Netherlands that called euthanasia for the mentally ill, people who do not have a physical illness but a mental illness, a liberation both for them and for the field of psychiatry. Can you imagine that? You have in the Netherlands euthanasia for the elderly who are tired of life. You have suicide clinic in Switzerland, where a recently Italian woman went who was rather elderly, and she was depressed because she believed she'd lost her looks. And the first her family learned about her death by assisted suicide was when they received her ashes in the mail. There's a fellow named Tom Mortier, who's a Belgian, whose mother, who had suffered lifelong serious clinical depression, was euthanized by an oncologist, a cancer doctor, who had no expertise in this field, without Tom Mortier even knowing it was going on, and the woman was healthy. So once the society accepts the premise, there really is no way to put on the brakes. And this idea that it's about terminal illness is an expedient. It is a pretense to get people to accept the idea, well, this is just going to be at the very end of life, when nothing can be done to alleviate suffering. And there isn't one law in the United States, not Oregon or Washington or Vermont, or if California, if Jerry Brown signs the bill here, that even requires suffering for assisted suicide. It just requires the, quote, magic diagnosis of 6 months or less to live. But even that is ridiculous, because many people diagnosed as having 6 months or less to live for years. I know a friend of mine was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer, given 2 months to live, about 9 years ago, and he's still going strong. So the whole thing is driven by emotion. It is driven by fear of suffering. It is driven by lies and mendacity and scheming and fast tricks, such as what happened here in California. But when people have the time to focus on what is actually being proposed and what has happened, then they start saying, wait a second, maybe we should think about expanding the opportunities for care, not instituting killing as a corruption of our medical system.
You mentioned before the British Parliament rejecting a right to die law. What was different there as opposed to in California?
Actually, I don't think a whole lot was different except the potential to actually debate this thing seriously and it extended for an extended time. The people who really rallied to oppose the agenda in the UK were the disability rights folk. Not Dead Yet UK, and there were demonstrations in front of the Parliament building with hundreds of people in wheelchairs saying that they did not want assisted suicide legalized because they saw themselves as the ultimate targets. The same is true here. The disability rights community here in California, again, part of the liberal coalition, were vociferous in their opposition to assisted suicide. It's one of the reasons that in the normal legislative session that it was rejected by Democrats. It took this kind of special filling of the committee with friendly votes that only was allowed because of the special session to get it through.
So the disabled who protested there in the UK and the disabled who are concerned about this here,
yep.
Do they have a real reason to be afraid of these right to die laws?
Absolutely, because the reason that people say that assisted suicide should be legalized, which is perhaps you need help with hygiene, fear of loss of dignity. This is why people commit assisted suicide. It isn't pain. If you take a look at the statistics published in Oregon and Washington, pain or the fear of pain isn't the reason people do this. It's how assisted suicide is sold. You know, you're going to be in agony. Nothing can be done. You better be able to have the pills. That's how it's sold, kind of this hysterical push, as if medical science hasn't advanced so far in the last 100 years. But the reason people actually do it is fear of loss of dignity, fear of being unable to engage in enjoyable activities, fear of being a burden on families. Those, if that's true about people who are terminally ill, which would be a relatively short-term condition, the same thing would be true even further for people with disabilities. And so they say, wait a second. All of the reasons that people say that assisted suicide should be legal, the supposed indignities of serious illness and so forth, apply to people with disabilities. Therefore, what this really is an anti-disability bigotry. And they also say, nothing about us without us. That's their phrase. If you take a look at what Jack Kevorkian was doing, people think, well, he helped terminally ill people commit suicide. Actually, only about 30% of the people who went to Jack Kevorkian were terminally ill. Most were disabled. And the disability rights community got engaged in this issue because they saw Jack Kevorkian assisting the suicide of disabled people, people with multiple sclerosis and so forth, to the general cheering of society. And they said, good grief, this is about us. And that's when they jumped into the fray. And they're absolutely correct about that.
With only about 30 seconds, back to that California law, it has built into it, if signed, a 10-year expiration date. It would have to be reauthorized after a decade. Is that an admission that this is a dangerous kind of social experiment here? And if so, what kind of experiment, in your opinion?
Now,
about 30 seconds.
In my view, it's actually meaningless. They threw that in order to try to get a couple of votes so people could try to justify what they were doing. They were going through this process of saying, whatever you want, we'll put anything in there you want, just vote yes. And that was one of those provisions that got actually a Republican to vote yes. Unfortunately, as we talked about earlier, this bill is really divided between the well-off and the not well-off. But two or three Republicans voted for this bill. It would have failed otherwise, and they all represented very well-off communities.
Wesley Smith is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center on Human Exceptionalism, a columnist for National Review Online, and author of several books, including Forced Exit, Euthanasia, Assisted Suicide, and The New Duty to Die. You'll find a link to this book and to Wesley's columns at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, and here's hoping and praying for a veto by Jerry Brown.
When we come back, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will join us. We're going to talk with him about the idea, the evangelical cliche, that Jesus is a gentleman. We'll find out what is meant by that and whether or not it's biblical right after this.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
He's the most Lutheran man in the world.
I'm not always in Pensacola, Florida, but when I am, I attend Emmanuel Lutheran Church.
Congregation of Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Pensacola, Florida invites you to join us for divine services on Sundays at 8 or 10:30, Sunday school and Bible class at 9:15. Whether you're in Pensacola to enjoy the white sandy beaches of the Emerald Coast or for military training, we invite you to join us. Jesus is here. Word, water, bread and wine for you.
Emmanuel, God with us.
Stay Lutheran, my friends.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans. People who believe that traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The Gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the Gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When the Apostle Paul stated, "I have become all things to all men," was he talking about fitting in with the world? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, "All Things to All Men." You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read Pastor David Wan's story of failing to find Lutheran theology in several Lutheran churches, but finding it in Scripture and the Lutheran Confessions, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.